Welcome to Morgantown Community Church. My name is Josh. I'm one of the pastors here, and we're thrilled you're here, especially, excuse me, if you're here for the first time. Thank you so much, Steve. Steve is one of our elders here, as he mentioned, and those are men and women who play a really significant role in who we are and what we do as a community, and you're going to be seeing more of them and hearing more from them on Sunday mornings, just in little things like that, where they kind of share what's going on and what our work is about. So you'll be getting to, we want to make sure you get to know them and know who they are so that you can have a relationship with them. Last week, I was very sweaty, if you were here, and very contagious. And I'll just tell you how bad it was. I'm going to start with a gross thing. I got up and did the sermon. My temperature was somewhere in the 103 area. And I went home afterward, and I took off my shoes, and I went to pull my socks off, and I could have just wrung them out. It was that sort of experience. So that's how gross I was. I had strep throat, and I started feeling better about Wednesday, I guess, after I went to the doctor on Monday. So I feel pretty good today. I've got a little allergy stuff going on, but nothing that's going to keep me from talking an hour and a half or so. So I hope you're ready for that as well. Last week, we started a new series called Forward, and I want to kind of recap a bit about what we did last week for my memory and for yours, because it's a little fuzzy for me too. But last week, we started talking about this idea, and we looked at three separate places in Scripture. One with Jesus in Matthew chapter 5, where he says, it is actually written in the Bible, in the Leviticus. He says, you've heard it said, but what he means is, in our Scriptures, it says, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. But I tell you, love your enemies. Right? Jesus begins with something that in its own time and place was a leap forward, right? He didn't say, if somebody steals your chicken, cut off their arm, right? Like that. No, it's eye for an eye. If somebody breaks out your tooth, you break out their tooth. If somebody gouges out your eye, you gouge out. It's trying to limit violence, but it still isn't solving the problem. So Jesus says, actually, the better thing would be love. The better thing would not be eye for an eye. The better thing would be love. And then later, Jesus comes in contact with a woman who his entire worldview and upbringing and teaching has taught him is sort of outside of God's love and outside of God's capacity to do anything with her. And she has greater faith than the people who are supposed to have the faith. And Jesus heals her. And then later we saw a story about a guy named Peter who runs into a similar person who should sort of have no understanding of God and is completely outside of the ability for God to love and do anything with. And yet Peter experiences God in this person's life. And they have this sort of light bulb moment where they realize, wow, what if our ancestors were doing the best they could with what they were given? But what if the Spirit of God is still alive and active today, leading us into more truth, more understanding, and even more loving and compassionate ways of being in the world? And one of the things we said last Sunday morning, I think maybe Walter who said it, but what you see in those stories is you see progress. You see progress. And this idea of being progressive is a thing that comes up a lot. And I realize there's a lot of misunderstanding about what that word means. I think for some people, when they hear the word progressive, they think it's sort of a synonym for liberal, right? So you can sort of be liberal and fly under the radar of liberal. But actually, progressive isn't liberal or conservative. Progressive has room for both of those groups. Because what progressive means is we approach the world, we approach God, we approach our faith with the understanding that there are questions that haven't been answered, and that at times, yesterday's answers aren't okay for today. Eye for an eye was an answer for yesterday. Loving your enemies is the ultimate good. And so what we're trying to talk about in this series is perhaps there have been some things that we were a part of, that we believed, that we trusted, that we understood, and in their own time and place, they were good, and they were leaps forward, right? It was a leap forward. But in our day, if we practice some of those same things, then we have really jumped the shark, and we have missed out on what God is doing in the world today, right? And we looked at several of those issues. We mentioned several of those issues last week. There were Christians who struggled and still struggle with all sorts of issues around equality. There are people who defended slavery by using the Bible, people who have defended mistreatment of women and suppressing their voices by using the Bible, people who have maligned the LGBTQ community using the Bible. And we have to learn that there is a way of being in the world that calls us forward. That the Spirit of God, and here's the way we talked about it. We can either see sort of tradition with a capital T, like our faith. We can see it as an anchor that holds us to the past and doesn't give us any room to move forward. Did you ever see those things? Maybe you had one of these when your kids were little, like the harness you put on with a leash. You know what I'm talking about? And so your kid's running, and you're just like, nope, you're not going anywhere, right? So that's how one way to see it. It's sort of leashing us to the past. Or we can see our ancestors' experience. My grandfather, your grandparents, all of our spiritual ancestors, their experience can be like the wind that blows our sails forward. We can allow the fact that they experience God to open us up to new experiences of God. And I think one of the reasons we're scared of that is because we just end up being a bit lazy, right? It's just easier to say what's already been said. It's easier not to ask tough questions. It's easier just to repeat sort of the dictates and dogmas of the past. And I think there's another reason. Because when you begin to open up Pandora's box, we like instinctively know that there's no shutting it, right? You ever had those moments in your life where like, I'll never be the same again? For me, it's when I heard the Joshua Tree by U2. I was like, I'm never going to be the same again. This changes everything. But you have these moments in life. Maybe it's when your first child was born. And you're holding that baby in your arms and you're going, oh my God, I'm ruined. Right? You have these moments. And for me, there have been these moments in my journey along the way where I learned something new or somebody introduced a new question or a new possibility. And I realized there's no going back. And I've talked to so many of you who've said, I could never go back to the way I used to think. I could never go back to the way I used to see it. That door is closed. I would just be pretending and miserable. I can't go back. And part of that understanding that I can't go back means that we are faced with a whole new territory. We are faced with uncharted waters. We are faced with uncharted territory here. We have no idea what's out in front of us. Are you with me? And that is terrifying. Like when you had all the answers, by the way, none of us ever have, but did you ever have that point in your life when you thought you had all the answers? You're probably 20-ish, right? What, nobody going to tell you anything. You've got it all figured out. You know exactly what to do. You've got it nailed. But the reality is when we talk about things like faith, when we talk about the Bible, we talk about God, lots of us grow up into adulthood still thinking we have it all figured out. I first started preaching when I was 17, and if you'd have told me at 17 that I didn't know something, I would have laughed at you because I had all the answers. And now almost 20 years in, I don't know very much. And I find that sort of exhilarating. There's more to be discovered. We haven't experienced everything. We haven't plumbed the depths of who God or what God is. We don't have all the answers. And that can be terrifying. It can be frightening. Because one of the things that we've been sort of taught, sometimes subconsciously, implicitly in our religious upbringing, is that certainty is the point, right? How many of you have ever been asked this question? If you died tonight, would you be certain? Yep. How many of you have ever been asked this? Do you know for sure what you believe? And you know what the answer to that question is, right? Whatever the person asking it thinks you should answer. Right? And there are 36,000 denominations. So you could have, and in those denominations, they're like, if there's 10 people in the room, there's 15 opinions. Right? So the reality is, what are we asking? We're asking, do you have a shred of doubt? Because if you have a shred of doubt, then you're not a person of faith. Right? How many of you ever had doubts about your faith, about what you believe, and the religious system made you feel really guilty and ashamed because of those doubts? Like somehow you weren't faithful enough. There was something broken in you. You just couldn't swallow the whole thing and believe it. You just had to ask questions. Why do you have to ask those pesky questions? Right? We were sort of raised to see doubt as the enemy of faith. And by the word faith, what we meant ultimately was certainty. Knowing for sure what you believe, knowing for sure why you believe it, answering all the questions, leaving no rock unturned, you have the ultimate systematic faith. And if somebody asks you a question, you can end up defending your faith really well, and you can sort of put them on their heels. And at the same time, one of the things when we were at youth group, they would just take us up to the mall in the church van, and they would let us out to go evangelize people. Which was terribly awkward, right? And I was not good at it. I didn't like to talk to strangers. My parents had told me not to do such a thing. And so I thought, like, you're asking me to violate one of the commandments of my household. And so they drop us off at the mall. And then we would end up in these conversations with people. And somebody would ask a question. And we would just look at each other like, I have no answer for that. And so then you just say, well, you just need to repent. Your questions mean that you're sinning. And you just need to repent. We've been taught to see doubt as the enemy of faith. And we've been taught to see faith as certainty. But do we really know anything for certain? Here's what Richard Rohr says. I love this quote. The opposite of faith is not doubt. The opposite of faith is certitude. The opposite of faith isn't doubt, really. The opposite of faith is thinking you know everything. It's thinking everything is certain and sure, and that there are no stones left unturned, that you have answered every single question that there has to be answered, that you know everything about God, that you know everything about Scripture, that you know everything about Jesus, that there is nothing that you can't speak to as an expert because we've got it all figured out. Right? Certainty. There's actually an author named Pete Enns who wrote a book recently called The Sin of Certainty. Because in so many ways, certainty functions like an idol. I mean, what is an idol? An idol is a thing that you would build and you'd place in a temple to represent the deity. And I think what the appeal of an idol is that we can sort of control that. We can sort of manage that. We know where it is. We know it's not going anywhere, right? It's just going to sit there and it'll do what we tell it to do. That's what an idol does. Whatever you tell it to do. And in this tradition that we're a part of, the Jewish Christian tradition, we have these commandments. And one of the commandments is, don't make idols. Why would God give a commandment like that? It's essentially God saying, you'll never be able to pinpoint me like that. You can't make an image of me because human beings are my image. And you can't control me. I'm uncontrollable. I'm sort of wild. And you can't just hem me in a temple and expect me to play nice. I've got more work to do in the world, right? So there's a certain amount of fear and this certain amount of, like, if we can just control God. And I think the things we were handed growing up, mostly for many of us, was certainty and fear, right? We were told, this is certainty, this is what you believe and you'll be right. And then we were also given fear. So the two things that shaped so many of our upbringings, and the people who taught us were doing sincerely, they loved us, they meant well, this is what they were given, right? So this is not a bashing the people who taught it. This is just what they knew. This is just what they've been given. But they gave us certainty and fear. Certainty we just can't have, and fear we just don't need. Certainty we can't have. Well, you can have certainty about a few things. Like if you leave the stove top on, if you leave your stove top on and you go over and touch it with your hand, what's going to happen? It's going to burn, right? How do you know that? Probably because you've done it. But also because it's part of the law of nature. Touch hot things, you get burnt. Right? If you were to step out in front of a bus, you're not going to pass through the bus. The bus is going to pass through you, right? There's certain things that we know will work. They tend to be with the laws of nature, and even though that's a little weird sometimes. But when it comes to the area of the heart, when it comes to belief, when it comes to the things we think are true, when it comes to what we believe, there just is no certainty because we can't prove it, can we? How many of you in the room right now can prove beyond a shadow of a doubt with empirical evidence that God exists? And yet I'd say a good chunk of us believe that the word God points to something larger that's real. But how many of you can prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that the way you read the Bible is the right way? I mean, mine is, but I'm asking the rest of you. Right? We can't do it. We just can't do it. Isn't it silly to kill people over this stuff? When what we're really talking about is not certainty because we can't prove anything. What we're talking about is faith. Abraham Joshua Heschel, great Jewish rabbi, says, faith is not the clinging to a shrine, but an endless pilgrimage of the heart. Faith is not the clinging to a shrine, whether that shrine is what you were always taught, whether that shrine is a building, whether that shrine is an altar of some sort. Faith is not clinging to something like that. Faith is, it's this trust, and it calls us forward. I want to look at a story real quick in the book of Genesis. And when you think about faith in the Bible, does anybody want to take a guess? Like, who is the person known most for faith in the Bible? Anybody? He had his name changed at one point. Abraham. He starts out Abram, he becomes Abraham. A guy named Paul writes about him in the book of Romans, talking about what great faith he had. He shows up in Hebrews chapter 11 as being a person of great faith. And so here in Genesis 12, this is the first time we meet Abraham. And when we meet him, this is how it begins. It's a really odd story. We have no information other than his lineage before this. And here's how Abraham's story begins. The Lord said to Abram, leave your land, your family, and your father's household for the land that I will show you. Now that is just about as clear as mud, right? Abram, he's going to become Abraham later. Abram, I want you to pack up all your stuff. I want you to take your family and I want you to move. Now we have no idea that Abraham has any understanding or connection with this God before. This God just sort of interrupts his life. Maybe he's at the grocery store, right? He's pushing the cart down the aisle, and he has this experience, and he's like, oh, we've got to move. And just to make it even clearer, he says, I want you to move to the land I will show you. How many of you go anywhere without a map anymore? Right? We always know. We always can know where we're going because Siri tells us. Apple Maps saves us most of the time, right? We know where we're going. We know the steps. We know what turn to make when. And Abram is told, I'll show you. And this is what God promises. I'll make of you a great nation, and I'll bless you. I will make your name respected, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse those who curse you. I'll curse. All the families of the earth will be blessed because of you. He makes Abraham this grand promise. If you follow me, everybody in the world is going to be okay. Everybody's going to get better because of your yes in this moment. And what exactly is Abram saying yes to? To leaving the familiar and to going into a territory that he's never been and doesn't know. So last month, August, Cody Wagner and my son Cohen and I were in New York City. I had a speaking gig. Cody was playing some music, and Cohen was just there because he has always wanted to go. And he loves the show Jesse on the Disney Channel, and that's set in New York. So it was just the perfect thing. So the day we get there, we flew out of Nashville at 6:45 in the morning because it was cheaper. Who flies at 6:45 in the morning? It's the worst life decision you can ever make. And so we get to New York. We get off the plane. It's about 9-something in the morning. We get our bags finally. It takes forever at LaGuardia, which is like the ninth circle of hell. And so we get our bags, and we have everything loaded, and we're going. And we get into Brooklyn where we're staying, and they're like, hey, let's go into Manhattan. And so that means we're going to ride the subway. And we rode the subway, and eventually we made it. Took a while. It was awkward. We were afraid we're going to get mugged, and it didn't happen. And so we get into Manhattan, and we're trying to meet up with some friends to have lunch. And so we are. I have my phone out, and I have Apple Maps out, and I'm sort of, I've got it like this, and we're walking. And so we'll be walking down the road, and all of a sudden, if you have an iPhone, there's a little blue dot, and that little blue dot is you. And so we're walking, but then that blue dot is there, but then there's this blue field that comes around it, and it starts moving, and suddenly we're over here. And we realize we've been walking for how long in this direction, and the map has no idea where we are. And now we need to go to like the 46th Avenue Street field roundabout, and we're looking for that. We have no idea where we are. In every direction we move in, the map moves. And eventually we just started making phone calls. Like, I am lost. I'm like Macaulay Culkin in New York City. I need somebody to come get me. But there's this sort of like, there was a frustration that came with that. And there was sort of this sense of, like, I don't want Cohen to know it, but I'm starting to get a little worried because I have no idea where we are, and I'm not sure how to get where we need to be. How many of you ever had that experience in life? Right? How many of you ever had that experience existentially? And by that I mean, it had nothing to do with a map in your hand. It had everything to do with the map in your heart. How many of you ever had that sort of, like, you wake up one morning, you're like, I have no idea where I am or who I am or what I'm doing in the world. And you would hope that happened in college, but you're like 45, right? Like, that's sort of the experience, right? And Abram has this, I just wonder what that moment would have been like for a person like Abram who just has this out of the blue experience, this sense that I have to move. And if I move, it's going to be good for everybody. I don't know where I'm supposed to go. I don't know what the journey looks like. I have no idea what I'm doing here. Abram faces this moment where, when he butts up against this truth. Oh, and he went. Life has a way of disrupting any shred of certainty we have. Right? It just does. Life has a way of disrupting all of our certainties. It has a way of taking the things we thought were true and turning them on their heads. Right? You worked at that job for 20 years, and then they just closed. And now you're wondering, what do I do for the next 10 years before I can retire? Right? You're in a relationship, and you thought it was solid. You thought it was going to be okay, and suddenly it's not okay. You went to college and got that degree because you thought it was going to help you, and now nobody's hiring people with that degree. When I went and got a religious studies degree, they're like, you're totally unemployable now. You know this. You kind of grew up with this sort of way of seeing the world that said A plus B equals C, but what you're finding out sometimes A plus B equals F or A plus B equals Z, and it's not shaking out the way you thought it would. How many of you have had that sort of experience? Abram's having that experience. Life is disruptive. It takes our best laid plans and it turns them on their heads. And we're left to try to figure out what to do. And my understanding of faith is that faith is what we do about the disruption. Faith is what we do with everything when it falls apart. I used to think that faith was about beliefs. Like if I just had the right set of beliefs, the right dogma or the right doctrine, if I affirmed the right creed, if I had all those things lined up, then I have good faith. But what I found in my life is the moments I thought I had everything figured out, I really didn't have a lot of faith. I was trusting certainty. I was believing I had certainty. And by the way, if we look at Abram's story here, notice what it doesn't say. It doesn't say Abraham had went to seminary and developed all of his beliefs. It doesn't say Abraham went and talked to the church council and they told him where he was in error. He didn't believe a bunch of stuff. He didn't have his doctrine worked out. Abram has this sense that he should go. And with no idea where he's supposed to go, he just sets out and goes. Faith, ultimately, having faith is about trust. It's not about having all the right beliefs because we don't know what those are. It's not having it all figured out, all the T's crossed and I's dotted. We don't know what those things are. Faith is simply about trust. It's trusting, that I believe it's Paul that says this, that it's trusting that the one who calls you is faithful. It's trusting that when you step out in the world to do the right and good thing, that you're not doing it alone. That the universe is not a hostile place, but it's a hospitable place. The one in whom we live, move, and exist will never abandon or never forsake us. It doesn't mean that life won't be disruptive. It doesn't mean that if you are just a good Christian person all the time, you'll never have trouble. No. What it means is that in this world, when you have this thing called trust, when you have this thing called faith, it means you'll never go through anything alone. It means that you have people with you. It means that the energy that began creation is sustaining you. Faith is ultimately about trust. Like, think about the difficult things you've done. When you forgive an enemy, what are you ultimately doing? You are trusting that forgiveness is better than bitterness. And some days I'm confused about that. Anybody else? Like, love your enemies? I'm a little confused about that on some days. Depends on the enemy. Right? When you extend something in generosity toward another person who has a need, you're trusting that what you're doing is going to make the world a better place. When you pour your time and your energy and your talents and your resources into something, you are trusting that nothing that we do in this life is ever ultimately in vain. That everything has significance, that everything matters, that nothing is wasted. There's a story I want to read you before we wrap up, and I want to hear from you in a second, too. This summer, by the way, we have a pool at our house. And over the last couple of years, our son, who's almost 8, has gotten really good at swimming. Really good at swimming. He's like a little fish. Now, he can touch the bottom, though, now with his tiptoes. And so I feel pretty comfortable about it. We were at a friend's birthday party at the city pool this summer, and he wanted to dive off the diving board. And I just didn't feel comfortable with it. So we let him try this little diving board first, and I went out there in the water with him, and he would come up fine. And, you know, it was good. He could do it without me, and I would just sort of hang by the side, and I could go get him if he needed it. But then, at one point, it was just time, and he wanted to jump off the high dive. And I watched him, and I'm going to show you a video in a second. I watched him as he went up there, and he kind of comes to the edge, and he looks, and he's sort of having this moment like, is this a good thing to do? Because I hate heights. I'd be having the same moment. Like, I would probably be hanging onto the rail, and you'd have to come get me, like send a fire truck with a ladder. I hate heights. But he gets up there, and you can tell there's a moment of pause. And then he has to make a decision. Does he trust himself? Does he trust his ability? He's done this before on the low dive. Does he trust his ability to swim? Does he trust his ability to be able to bring himself up and over to the side? And then he has to decide, does he trust me? Does he trust that I'm going to jump in and get him if he gets into trouble? And then I have to decide, do I trust me that I'm going to be able to jump and get him if he gets into trouble? And so I just want to show you this video because it's a proud dad moment. I was just looking for an excuse to have one today. And I got to apologize. It's only 12 seconds long, but it's a slow-mo video because when things are awesome, you slow-mo it, okay? So check this out. Can you push the sound on that? Because I think it's going to be really... It sounds windy, but it wasn't that windy. It's like somebody's revving a motorcycle. decision is made. Up. What about that kid? Yeah. There's something about that moment with your feet at the edge going, can I trust this? Can I trust myself? Can I trust the people around me? Can I take this leap? Nothing is certain, right? I mean, inherently, jumping off the high dive is a dangerous thing to do because nothing is certain. Can I trust? There's a story I want to read to you quickly, and then I want to get some response from you, and then I have a thing I want us to do together. Mark chapter 9, this is a story of Jesus encounters a boy who has been possessed. Listen to the story. When Jesus, Peter, James, and John approached the other disciples, they saw a large crowd surrounding them and legal experts arguing with them. Suddenly, the whole crowd caught sight of Jesus. They ran to greet him, overcome with excitement. Jesus asked them, "What are you arguing about?" Someone from the crowd responded, "Teacher, I brought my son to you since he has a spirit that doesn't allow him to speak. Whenever it overpowers him, it throws him into a fit. He foams at the mouth, grinds his teeth, and stiffens up. So I spoke to your disciples to see if they could throw it out, but they couldn't." Jesus answered them, "You faithless generation, how long will I be with you? How long will I put up with you? Bring him to me." They brought him. When the spirit saw Jesus, it immediately threw the boy into a fit. He fell on the ground and rolled around, foaming at the mouth. Jesus asked his father, "How long has this been going on?" He said, "Since he was a child, it has often thrown him into a fire or into water trying to kill him. If you can do anything, help us. Show us compassion." Jesus said to him, "If you can do anything, all things are possible for the one who has faith." At that, the boy's father cried out, "I have faith. Help my lack of faith." I want to show you that on the screen. I love this response. I have faith, but not really. Doesn't this describe where we live most of the time? Like, I have faith most days for part of the day, maybe 20 minutes. But I also have this part of me that doesn't have faith. This part of me that finds it hard to trust. This part of me that feels worried and anxious. And I was sort of raised to feel guilty about that part of me. And what I realized, that's just the journey, isn't it? We live in a world where certainty is not guaranteed. We live in a world we just can't know much of anything for certain. And so our job in the world is simply to trust. When Cohen gets worried about something, is he going to be on time? Is he going to have money for the book fair? You know, all that sort of thing. One of the things I always tell him is this. You just got to trust us, man. We've never let you down yet in any significant way. You just have to trust us. And I think that's true for all of us, isn't it? You can't have certainty, friends. You just can't. I'm sorry if that's like bad news. You just can't. But you have something else. And when we focus on certainty, we miss the thing we've been given. And that is a beautiful opportunity to trust. To trust that the one who began creation, the one who energizes it and keeps it going, is the same one who cares about us. The same reality that we live, move, and breathe in. The same reality that wants us to thrive. The same reality that wants us to be healthy. The same reality that wants us to be okay in the world. And it's trustworthy. It's trustworthy. So I want to pause there. As we talk about faith being not a set of beliefs, but faith being trust, I want to engage in some conversation. Then we have a prayer we're going to do together. And then if we have time, maybe they're going to close us with a song. Anybody have any response to this? Any questions? Any comments? Yes, Ms. Gail.
He suffered massive burns several years ago. And this is an article that has been posted, but his one quote was this. "I was taught since I was a little boy that if I was good, God would do good things for me. Guess what? I've tried to do good things, and God roasted my rear end.
The accident turned my head upside down, but the good news is that even in the midst of a very painful struggle, God's presence and his truth began to speak.
Thank you. Let's just keep that out there. I think Walter was next. So. People online, I know that you don't like microphones, guys, but people online are like, we can't hear what people are saying. Okay, I mean, they don't say it like that, but.
Make this as short as I can, but I think I grew up, I found, in a culture of church where a lot of times people wanted to measure your faith. They actually, I think, thought there was a measurement for faith. But what I've come to believe for myself is that there's not. There's no measurement. There's not, oh, well, you just didn't have enough faith. That's why you weren't healed. Or that, you know, maybe the good thing that you're wanting would happen if you just had more faith. But I don't think there's a measurement for faith anymore. There's no metric system. There's no any type of measurement that we can put on faith. And when I found that through the toughest times in my life is when I actually find that I do got a little bit of faith and that I feel the comfort and the peace of God.
Yeah. Yep. Moksha. And Walter, I love that. And what I would say to that is it would be like getting mad at your 6-year-old because they couldn't pass the ACT. They couldn't get a good ACT score. It's just not, they're not, like, it's a journey. Right, it's a journey. And so the idea that we should have some sort of faith that maybe we'll have when we're 90, that's unfair, right? We have the faith we have in this moment on the journey, and that's enough. We'll come back to you. Let's go, Moksha. You got the mic.
I'll just say that in relation to that story that you just shared too, that poor boy probably had, like, epilepsy or something like that. Yeah. And I mention that because, you know, there's so much fear that's based around what is unknown. When we haven't, through the course of human history, when we haven't known the answer to something, we often approach it with fear and chastise it or demonize it. And so that's where true faith comes in as well, is not anticipating everything to be bad.
Woo! That'll preach, girl. That's better than anything I said right there. She should have just said that and you could have already been at lunch. Sorry. Anybody else? Gail, do you have, can we? Yes, Gail says faith is taking the next step. It's like Indiana Jones, and which one is that? Where he's like, he takes a step out. You know what I'm talking about? If you haven't seen Indiana Jones, that's not a spoiler. That's your fault. It was in the 80s. Like, I can't do anything about that. Anybody else? That's so good, Moksha. Anybody else? I'll get it in just a minute. Yeah, it's turned off. You got to turn it on. Okay.
It's on. There's I can't remember what movie it's from, but there's like a Disney song, and one of the lyrics in it is, sometimes knowing I don't know is part of getting through. And that's been true, I think, for me sometimes, too, is if I did know then the outcome of whatever, then I don't know that I could handle it.
Yeah. And there's a certain amount of being able to say, I don't know, and I still trust. Right? There's a certain amount of freedom in that. Like, I don't know. I don't know what the outcome is, but I still trust. Anybody else? Wow, you guys are so great. So good. So here's what I want to do. Let's stand together. We're going to read this prayer. And band, you guys can come on up if you want while we're doing this prayer, because we're not going to close our eyes or anything, so you can't make a stealthy approach. I want to read this prayer together from Thomas Merton, who was actually stationed here in Kentucky at the Abbey of Gethsemane. And this is a prayer that you've probably heard before that's quite well known of his. So can we just read this together? It's several slides, but this will sort of be our sermon closing prayer together. Okay, are you ready? My Lord God, I have no idea where I am going. I do not see the road ahead of me. I cannot know for certain where it will end. Nor do I really know myself. And the fact that I think that I am following your will does not mean that I am actually doing so. I hope that I will never do anything apart from that desire. And I know that if I do this, you will lead me by the right road, though I may know nothing about it. But I believe that the desire to please you does in fact please you. and I hope I have that desire in all that I am doing. Therefore, will I trust you always. Though I may seem to be lost and in the shadow of death, I will not fear, for you are ever with me, and you will never leave me to face my perils alone. And everybody said, Amen. Amen.